Well, welcome to Oregon Crossroads. I'm Dr. Bud Pierce, and we're talking about all things that are important to Oregonians with the emphasis on freedom and prosperity. Because when the people are free to be who they are and to act in the way they want to act and to run their business, run their lives the way they want, prosperity will follow. And today I have the great pleasure of having a wonderful guest, Mr. Sean Gillians. And Sean is a huge and very important person in the prosperity of Oregonians because he's interested in improving the manufacturing and commerce environment for Oregon. And there's nothing more important to Oregonians than to have a prosperous and successful manufacturing sector. Sean is a really smart attorney. And you know, I'm a doctor, so there's a little maybe a little tension here, but not in this case. And Sean went to Hastings Law School at UC Berkeley, top-notch law school, and he's dedicated his life to public service, really, through ensuring that manufacturing and commerce can be successful in our state. And again, critically important. 200,000 jobs out of roughly 2 million jobs, 10% of gross domestic product, jobs that pay on average 30 to 40% more than other jobs in Oregon. So as you can imagine, if we had a more robust manufacturing sector, we'd be more prosperous, the state would be better off, the world would be better off, in my opinion. So I'll kick it off from there. And I always start off with these broad-based conversations saying, what is the state of affairs for manufacturing in our state?
You know, thank you, Bud, for that. I think as you sort of outlined the role that manufacturing plays in the state of Oregon, we're in a pretty good space right now. It's harder and harder to find employees, and that's probably a good problem to have when you're searching for employees. I think the issues we have are around what Salem potentially will do, and particularly the legislature, around regulatory environment, and then taxation potentially, and then obviously huge sweeping bills that could have the impact of driving businesses out of state. A lot of what we talk about, because I know people hear that all the time, oh, businesses are going to leave Oregon. Thus far, you haven't really seen that come to fruition where a business actually picks up and leaves. But what you have seen is companies that are currently here that are Oregon-based, and rather than expanding in Oregon, they choose to buy a new facility in another state. And the jobs that could have been created here are created in South Carolina or created in a lot of cases in another country because it's actually easier for that to occur because of the environment we place on businesses in Oregon and particularly manufacturing.
So let's start kind of at the what kind of bottom of the work up. So let's talk about workforce and preparedness. Yep. And I have heard from manufacturers and employers it's harder and harder to get trained individuals. And the other thing I heard this morning, interestingly, when I was speaking to a remodeler was just people that will show up on time and work hard and be responsible and be reliable. So where do we need to go with that? I kind of argued this morning that we almost need a cultural change in terms of getting people to want to emphasize, to be reliable and be trustworthy. And that's almost like almost cultural. But on the practical side of training students, a country like Germany, hugely successful in manufacturing. And they have a whole system of training that would start with our CTE efforts. Yeah. And then take it from there into an apprenticeship. And after about 8 years of getting ready, then you're ready. I mean, you're flat ready. So is there a sense that you've gained that there's either leadership, either in the business community or in our legislature or in the governor's office that recognize that and wants to take us that way?
You know, I think you and I were talking briefly before we started about it. You look at the length of our school year, you look at our graduation rates, we're second worst in the country. Maybe we've moved up to third worst. We're going to somehow celebrate that we're now third worst instead of second worst. When you have kids dropping out at that rate from high school, to expect that they're somehow going to be successful later in life and know that they need to show up on time or show up not hungover or show up without doing drugs. I've had the opportunity to represent a major manufacturer in the Portland metropolitan area where at that point in time, they were paying 2 to 3 times the minimum wage for a starting wage just for sort of an apprenticeship level position, and they couldn't fill it. Because they couldn't get people who would actually show up and be there on time and be drug-free in the workplace. And so I think That's a big problem. Obviously, the voters of Oregon decided we wanted to invest more in CTE. We've done a big disservice to a lot of our kids in taking shop classes and other things out of the classroom. And that's, I think, in part why you see graduation rates declining. Because if a kid doesn't see a path for something that they would see success in life, they're not going to stick around. Whereas you look at the graduation rates for kids who are involved in CTE, it's significantly higher than those that aren't. And so the voters of Oregon passed Measure 98. They said they wanted a certain amount of money going to CTE. The legislature immediately underfunded that, which was very disappointing for those of us in the manufacturing space. And so I think that's a big push for us on Salem is invest what the voters actually wanted you to in CTE. And if not, as much as they said, let's go beyond further, which is ultimately beneficial to everyone if these kids are successful in life.
Very good. If, looking from a manufacturer's point of view, if you looked at, our whole society is highly bureaucratized, lots of rules, lots of telling you how to do your job or your process. Let me just ask you this. If we had a wish list of three things that could be done in our state to turn on manufacturing, I'll say three, yes, a reasonable number, going one, two, and three, most important, second, and third most, or maybe they're all equally important, what would you say, what's the direction we should take? What in terms of practical, understandable things that I can understand and our listeners can understand?
Yeah, so I'm going to continue on education.
Okay, one, education.
And I talked a little bit about CTE and sort of traditional manufacturing and blue-collar jobs. Manufacturing is a lot more than that, too. It's high tech, it's engineering, it's science, and we have woefully underfunded our universities as well. So we really haven't had that opportunity. We're often referred to as a flyover state where people go from Seattle to Silicon Valley and we're just kind of the in-between there. I think that we're making progress with that. There was a significant gift by Phil Knight to the University of Oregon for the new science campus there. But that's going to take years to kind of come to fruition. So education,
And one thing, as you brought up the university, I thought it was very cool because, again, the Germans who figured this out after World War II, they actually tied their universities into their companies, tried to develop something that's a little better than is available, give it to their companies, and then let them manufacture that item that's a little value enhanced, and you can usually sell for a lot more money.
Yeah.
And so every time they're manufactured, there's that concerted work, that practical application of knowledge to the manufacturing process or the product process. So very good. So education, training, number one. What about number two?
A regulatory environment that's certain.
Okay.
And
go ahead
it's,
and expand
on yeah, that. What companies are looking for in long-term investments is that those investments are going to be able to bear fruit in Oregon, that expanding facilities here, they're going to be able to continue business, not in an irresponsible manner or not within our strict environmental regulations, but when the rules change suddenly, this might get me in a little bit of trouble given the amount of time I've spent over at the legislature, but what I always say is the legislature does two things really well. Nothing and overreact. And we saw that with Clean Air Oregon, where you had one facility in Portland that sort of became the poster child, and we immediately tried to rush through rulemaking to get it done. There were very real impacts there. You know, a lot of times, despite the fact that you see something that absolutely needed to be addressed, it was a facility next to a daycare center, and there were issues there. But you need to sort of take a step back and take the emotion out of it sometimes and sort of look, how do we create the best program? And I think eventually we got to a pretty good program, but boy, the first couple of versions of what Clean Air Oregon would look like were very problematic. And if a business doesn't have certainty that when they expand, they're going to be able to get their air permit, they're more than willing to play by all the rules that the state lays out there, but they need to know what those rules are and that those rules aren't going to change. I have a good friend who's an attorney in a large firm in Portland who deals with air quality permitting. And he used to say when companies came to him, I guarantee you within 2 years I'll get your permit. 2 years, right? So you're going to have to wait that. But he would at least say that. And I talked to him the other day. He said, I can't even make that guarantee that I can get them the permit anymore. And that is a huge lost opportunity for Oregon when we have companies who potentially want to locate here or expand here. Because it really is both. We need to do both. And they're passing because of our regulatory environment, that's a big problem.
So that was bullseye glass, as I recall, in that. And the other issue is, I seem to recall that when Nike wanted to expand their facility, and there were some negative tax implications, mm-hmm. that the legislature met immediately and came up with a 30-year solution against stability. Mm-hmm. And I'm pretty sure that when Intel goes to expand their facility, which is very important to manufacturing, again, they ask for certainty. They ask for certainty. And because when you have certainty, you can make your planning and make your business work on a financial basis. So those are really great examples.
Well, and Intel is the perfect example where they're injecting billions of dollars in new construction in Washington County. If not for Washington County and probably beer and wine in the Great Recession, Oregon would have fared much worse. That those two things sort of held us through the Great Recession here. Intel has an opportunity to locate anywhere in the U.S. or anywhere else. And actually, they have an empty plant that's similar to the one they're building in Arizona that they've decided not to move forward with. Great. So, you know, we're always in that delicate balance of making sure that we protect the businesses that are here that are very high-paying jobs and tremendous jobs. The third thing, getting back to sort of the list, and it revolves around that too, our land use system is incredibly restrictive. The availability of industrial land, which is critical for manufacturing, is very limited, particularly in the Portland metropolitan region. And when you don't have large flat parcels that you can put a large facility on, you know, Oregon is proud of its land use system and its, you know, Senate Bill 100 and building up. You can't build up manufacturing. Manufacturing facilities need to build out, and large facilities look no further than the Intel expansion. So, you know, if you improved our education system, which I think is completely achievable if we look at it correctly, if you gave regulatory certainty, and if you improved our land use process, I think you'd really see us take off.
So which ones can, what would you choose first? Is it low-hanging fruit education, or is it really not?
Low-hanging fruit should be education. Uh-huh. Obviously, the easy answer is to put new dollars into the system. Unfortunately, when a lot of the dollars are going back out of the system to a retirement system that is woefully underfunded and promised some benefits that probably are not achievable, that becomes a very real issue. And that's a very real issue at every level of education. It's not just K through 12, higher ed faces PERS issues as well. And until we're willing to have the courage to address both revenue and cost containment, I think we're going to be in a lot of trouble in Oregon.
So I noticed that Amazon decided not to go into Brooklyn, to the chagrin of a lot of top-level leadership in New York State.
Yeah.
And you can't help but feel a little of that feeling in Oregon, or that kind of sentiment. And again, I think that obviously, the leaders of the state said, well, we gave $3 billion in incentives, but that was based on getting $27 billion from the investment. So we would look at that as a 1-to-9 ratio. So we put in a dollar and we get 8 or 9 back. That's a good deal. How do we explain this better to Oregonians so that they understand? Because Amazon is going to expand in West Virginia, or in Virginia. They're going to expand in somewhere else in the South, Nashville, or wherever they have their other area. I noticed that Newark, who put forward a $7 billion package, is now going after them. But again, you get the sense that people aren't getting the right information, don't think about it in the right way. How do we change that? Who's driving that?
That's literally the billion-dollar question. Mm-hmm. Because if we gave that level of incentives in Oregon, that all you would hear is it was a corporate giveaway of $3 billion. If not for investing that money, you'd never have the rest, but that's all anyone ever focuses on. And in Washington County, we actually have what's called the Strategic Investment Program that does exactly what you're talking about. It's why we got the Silicon Forest out there. And every session, the legislature tries to pull back more and more of it, saying, well, those companies shouldn't get that property tax break. The amount of income tax that those companies in Washington County generate that would not have been there but for those incentives to get there is astronomical, and the return is in the hundredfold. And so, you know, I think it's telling the story more about the positive impacts that employers have on our state. And that's not just manufacturing. I think manufacturing, we have a very good story to tell. And what we do for communities as far as providing living wage jobs and above is great. But I think business in general in Oregon doesn't do a good enough job. They sometimes get demonized rather than being all the positives that they provide for a community. And you saw that sort of play out with Measure 97, where it was, we're going to go after the big corporations. Well, if the big corporations aren't here, then there's not the employees here who are generating the income taxes that pay for everything we enjoy in our state.
Is Oregon and Oregon Manufacturing and Commerce trying to organize that campaign? Because I would say that if we could help our citizens understand, we'd be so far better off. And there is a lack of understanding.
There definitely is, and I think that's something that we have taken on. That from the manufacturing side, at the very least, we want to promote more of what our member companies do in their communities. On our website, we have a featured member page where we do exactly that, sort of show all the goodwill and the investments that our companies make in their communities.
So maybe we should go back after Amazon.
I think we're a little too close to Seattle. And our politics are too similar to Seattle's.
All right. So, again, so there you have it. It's really about bringing people to Oregon and keeping people in Oregon who can create jobs. So having a business skill, having a skill in medicine, in law, in business. I mean, all those are unique skills that people can bring fruit to our whole society if they're allowed to be free and to do the work that they can do. And I think what we need to do to talk to our leadership is say, turn people loose. And I would say turn loose in manufacturing and medicine and law. And frankly, turn loose in the government, because there's a lot of great government employees that are so shackled by the rules of government employment, they're completely frustrated and can't get the job done. And if we do what we should do, which is allow our people to do the great work that they can do in a state where they're free to do it and not controlled by bureaucracy and not told no all the time, our prosperity is unimaginable. So again, I want to thank Sean for speaking to us today. And I want him to continue to do the great work that he's doing with Oregon Manufacturing Commerce. And I look forward to the day when we have 300, 400, 500,000 manufacturing jobs in Oregon. Sean, thank you very much.
Thank you.